Hi, I'm Anthony Harris, and you're listening to a Functional Tennis podcast.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Functional Tennis podcast. This week, we're speaking to Anthony Harris, coach of top 100 player Lloyd Harris. We spoke about Anthony's background in tennis, becoming number one in Zimbabwe, and then moving to college tennis in the US, and then moving into high performance coaching. He tells us how he saw the woe factor in Lloyd as a 14-year-old and how he's helped guide him to the top 100. He also tells us about his academy, setting up his Match Foundation, which gives opportunity to underprivileged children in South Africa to excel in tennis, education, and show them core values which will help them excel in life. He ends it with giving coaches tips to help their players break into the top 100, as well as tips for juniors who are trying to break into the men's game. If you find it interesting, please share it with your tennis friends and hit the subscribe button if you're not already a subscriber. Let's go. Hi, Anthony. Absolutely fantastic to have you on the Functional Tennis podcast. How are you?
Hi, Fabio. Thanks for having me on Functional Tennis. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. I'm very good. I'm here in Dublin. It's a warm day today. Summer eventually hit us here. It took a while. We've had a good few weeks here. How's all in South Africa?
Well, you're talking to me in Cape Town. We're in the middle of winter, but we had a beautiful day today, and Cape Town's special as ever, and we're waiting for you to come visit.
That will happen. Not this year. As I was saying to you earlier, we are due a baby in a few weeks. So I'm on lockdown. I've had enough tennis this year and I'm on lockdown until at least 2020. So I will try and get at Cape Town at some stage, probably a family holiday. We will be definitely penciled in at some stage, but no guaranteed date yet. So tell me a bit about Anthony Harris. Where did tennis start for you?
It started for me around the age of 7 years old. I grew up in a family that sent me to tennis lessons. And then, you know, I progressed to provincial tennis, and then I became number one in my country as a junior, and then I went to university on a tennis scholarship, and I followed this basic route. Once I went to university, I kind of realized that going professional wasn't going to happen, so I decided to go into professional coaching. And from the age of about 24, I've been only in professional coaching. And then about 8 years ago, I decided to take all I'd learned and build an academy at home with a little dream and a goal.
Great, that is absolutely fantastic. And tell me, so you were talking. You're obviously, sorry, I just want to get this clear. You're from South Africa.
So I was born in Zimbabwe, and as a kid, I grew up in Zimbabwe, and I played a lot of but my mother is South African. And so I've always been between South Africa and Zimbabwe. And yeah.
Did you represent Zimbabwe?
Yeah. So I represented Zimbabwe, and I was actually number one in the men's at one stage and number one in the juniors. And at that point, my family decided I should get a degree, a university degree. So I got a scholarship to the United States, and I went play to do this route. And that route led to not going professional. And I did play some satellites in those days. And then it seemed that professional tennis wasn't going to be able, so I decided to go into coaching.
Great. And did you obviously know the Black Brothers?
Yeah, of course. I grew up with Byron and Wayne as kids, and we played together and played against each other a lot. So yeah, I know them really well.
That's great, because I remember them on the tour as a young kid. They were always very competitive. And what university were you in the States?
So I was in Texas, at North Texas State, and then when I finished university, I started working for a professional coach by the name of Hans Felius, who had about like 6 WTA players, and he asked me if I wanted to be his assistant. So at the age of, like, I was about 25, 26, I began working with girls between the age of, they were like ranked between 500, and we had like one girl who was like 100 in the world approximately. So that was my introduction from university into coaching. And from there, I actually went one-on-one with the one girl for a little bit. Her name was Anna Smashnova. I think she reached eventually like 27 or something WTA. And then I started to work with some. I got involved working with I don't know if you know a young kid called Dudi Sela.
And yes.
And so Dudi was a little kid, and I was offered to help like develop him. And eventually we brought him to like something like I think he was 7 ITF, and then he eventually reached reached, I think, top 30 ATP. And so this was like the process. And then I was just involved in professional tennis and working with different players. And then I decided, okay, now it's time to do something much bigger and to do something meaningful. So came to South Africa to build this academy.
So you've been at, you obviously from a young age, you're at the high performance level. So you skipped all the beginner stuff. You were straight at the top and you've been there ever since, it looks like.
So actually, yes, I was there. I started at only in the high performance level. In the year of 2000, there was this American company called the ITC, and they asked me to come for an interview. They own 16 tennis centers. So they had about 5,000 students, and there was about, I don't know, 150, 200 coaches or something. And I went for the interview, and the next thing I found myself as program director of the entire organization, which I never planned to actually go into out of high performance. And the next thing I found myself in charge of 200 coaches, and I had 5,000 students over various centers and programs. And actually I think it was 2004, we were up to like about 7,500 students. We had like 24 internationally ranked players. It was quite successful. And in this stage, I created a motor skills program because I felt like it was a good introduction to attract kids to come to our centers. So it took us about a year or 2 years to build this program. It was a 30-hour structured motor skills course, which we were running in kindergartens, and so that the kids would or at the centers. So I really, and at this, during this process, I started to study and understand a lot more about the development side of tennis and development of kids. And so I did have some involvement in this side of tennis. And during this period, actually, we did some joint ventures with IMG, with Boliteri. We worked with a few Spanish academies. So I went and did a lot of the Spanish certification stuff. We worked with RPT from Spain. So I did get quite a bit of the other side of tennis, yeah.
That sounds like you got a hell of a lot of experience there. I'd say when you got to setting up your own place, it must have been a lot easier, like managing, 7,000 players? That's like you're managing big, massive corporation.
Yeah, no, it was. I think it's probably the biggest tennis school in the world. I don't know. There's something bigger than that, but it was quite a challenge. But yeah, it wasn't so difficult.
It was too easy for you. It was too easy. I want to set up my own place.
So then, yes. So what I didn't tell you was when I was actually at number one in Zimbabwe, I was like about 19 years old. At that time, I decided to go and help black kids in an area called Mofokozi. So I set up this program and I was coaching them for free, and I got quite a feeling from doing that. And I just knew that one day I was going to come back home to Africa and make sure that all these kids that I see out there in these townships and in not the best areas, that one day that they're going to get a chance to really a fair chance. An equal chance. So that was the dream. So after all the years of working and learning and working on the tour and learning, develop, whatever, I said, okay, we're going to come now. We're going to build this center in Cape Town, which is going to be for those kind of kids, that it won't be because of money that a child won't get an opportunity. So if you're from Mitchell's Plain, which is probably one of the roughest, toughest areas in Cape Town, or you're from the toughest township, if you've got the desire and you've got the will, and we're going to give you a chance. And so that was the idea. And the idea was that we were going to build an African champion and we were going to do it at home. And it's an interesting thing is that a lot of people said to me, well, you should start with development and why are you starting at the top? But there's a very, when you go into an area that's tough and an area that's a lot of distress or problems, and you tell people, yeah, we're going to make you tennis players. It's like they cannot understand really or believe that. Okay, so but I'll give you an example. So we found a kid in Mitchell's Plain. He's 7 years old, and we brought him to the center, and we bring him to the top in his age group under 10, and he goes off to the Smirka Bowl in Croatia, play in the under 10 championships, and goes with his dad. Now his dad's probably like, his dad hasn't been on a plane, and for these people to fly to Croatia to compete in like a World Junior Under 10 championship, it's insane.
Yeah.
But when Leo and his dad went to Croatia, every single kid in Mitchell's plane wanted to come to tennis. Hmm. So what I understood was that without the belief and credibility, if you don't have credibility and you don't create belief, then it's going to be very hard to get the community and to get these people to and everyone to believe in it and to join. So that's why we started with a high performance. And if 7 years ago I was spoke to you and I told you, yes, we're going to build this little center and in 7 years we're going to have 83 ITF titles and we're going to have a top 100 player and two boys will reach top 100 juniors in 7 years, you would have laughed at me.
Well,
but that was the concept behind the what we wanted to create, and that's what we're trying to build.
And that's what something I was going to touch on later, but we can touch on it now. That is your Match Foundation.
Exactly. So after 3 years, my wife and I were funding the whole thing initially in the beginning, and you can imagine what it was costing to have kids, because you can imagine what it costs to get kids to tournaments. I mean, we have, for example, this last week, I mean, we've got, so Lloyd was in America playing. We've got two kids in Tunisia playing futures. We've got 5-6 kids playing ITF juniors in Zimbabwe this week. You can imagine what it costs to get these kids to these tournaments with the coach. So after like 3 years, I realized that if we want to make this thing sustainable, the only way is to create a foundation that's basically going to raise money to, number one, get these kids to tournaments, end of story, because they have to compete. I mean, if we're talking about a fair, and that was the whole concept behind the academy, was that, you know, this might sound crazy, but if we're going to have a fight, me and you have a automatic weapon and I have a revolver, I don't want to fight. But if you have the revolver and I have automatic weapon, I'm ready to fight.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to make sure that our kids were with, they are the ones that have the advantage, not us always being the one with the disadvantage. And that at least we would be like on an absolutely equal playing field. It means that, so if we want to do that, if for a kid of 14, 15, 16 who's playing, say, ITF, for example, or ITF, they're going to have to play 50, 60 matches in a year. We don't even count tournament. We talk about for their competitive development, we need at least 50 or 60 official matches. To get 50 or 60 official matches, it's going to cost a lot. So we realized that if we want this thing to be sustainable, and we're going to have the money to get them to the tournament. So we created the Match Foundation. And that was just, we met this incredible lady and she saw the dream and we said to her, you want to be part of this? She said, I'm in. And she created the man, her name's Anthula Markovitz, and she created the Match Foundation. And basically we started raising money and every cent was going to the kids going to their tournament. And some a little bit coming to fees, obviously, which is nice because we've got to pay the coaches and everybody. Yes. And so that's the reason for the foundation.
That's an amazing story. And I'm so glad to hear what you've been doing and giving these kids such an opportunity, and your dream is just amazing. And did I see Mary Pierce and Martina Hingis are patrons?
Yes. So Mary, both of them actually came out Cape Town, and they helped us with fundraising to get these kids to tournaments. So they were both incredible. I mean, they just, whatever was asked, they participated, and we had an incredible fundraising event last year sometime in March, and they flew out here and they helped, and that event got the kids to basically 6 months of tournament.
That's amazing. And how do you actually find the players? Do you go to the smaller towns like Mitchell's Plain and you host small events there and you check them out? You do from an athletic ability, what's your protocol?
So the protocol was to just initially like find a few Leos, which meant we went into Mitchell's Plain, we went to see the tennis set up there. I mean, basically Mitchell's Plain is four courts with no clubhouse. It's just four courts in like, can you imagine, like in an open area? So okay, people park their cars and that's the clubhouse. And we saw these people trying to do amazing stuff, and we just went, hey, listen, this kid is really amazing, can we help? And they said, yeah, of course. We said, well, because the academy company that we actually built, which we actually own, is in a very, very wealthy area of Cape Town, like the wealthiest area, which is another thing we wanted, because we wanted these kids to feel special that they were coming to, like, not that, you know, they have this thing in like a far out or somewhere. So we just said to them, would you like to come and practice in Sea Point, and we're going to help you? And they said, yeah, sure. And it was easy. And right. now we have a waiting list. It's crazy, because you must remember, we're very small. We're like really, really small. We're just a tiny little operation in Cape Town with 5 coaches and 20 or so kids, because you can imagine the cost to support 10 kids flying in here.
Do you host them, or do they go back home every day?
They go back. So they go back home every day. So we help with transport. And basically the kids come in the morning. We've got a company that oversees, they do the Cambridge homeschooling system. And so we have a company that oversees. So every kid says, analyzed and say, right, so you're going to do this year, these subjects next year, and you'll finish in this year. And then they come in the morning, the kids, we have them brought to the academy, and they practice from like 9, they start at 9 and they finish around 12, 12:30. And then we have a tutor that comes and works with them while they do their schooling. And each one's, you know, in his own like sort of homeschooling program. So she's just helping each one, like making sure he's reaching his assignments or his targets, etc. And then they have their second session in the afternoon. So every day they have 2 sessions of fitness and 2 sessions of 10. And so because one of the most important things about this whole thing that we're doing is that every single kid that comes here, we're going to change their lives. So if we don't, and if you don't, if they're not going to be a tennis player, they're going to get an education, and we're going to find them a job afterwards. So it's literally, it's a concept of creating fishermen and not giving fish to hell. And we want these kids to like go back into the community and be empowered to be leaders and to develop other people like they were developed, because that's true transformation. So it's very, we've had 9 kids so far that got scholarships to the United States since we opened. And we have one boy, for example, he's in Illinois right now.
Okay, good call.
He's actually, his brother is 16 and is 102 ITF, Kolo Monsi.
I know.
So
I was just going to jump in. Sorry. I was just going to say, I know Kolo. We've put up some of his videos. I didn't know at the time he trained at your academy. It was kind of funny, but now I've seen his pictures and his videos on our Instagram account. He's a good kid.
He's amazing kid. Yeah. And his brother's in Illinois, on a tennis scholarship. His brother reached 92 ITA.
Great.
So we're operating on just very strict benchmarks. So if the kids reach certain benchmark, we'll put the money for them to go pro.
Great.
And if not, then we're going to guarantee that you get an education.
And I'm sure the chances of them not getting an education would have been very high had you not have taken them in. Would that be correct?
Yeah, well, very good chance. I mean, you know what? I know this sounds crazy, but you should have an interview with one of these kids one day.
I will.
And just, you know, to speak with a kid like Mickey. These are kids that Mickey will tell you, like, he doesn't go outside because of his gunshots, and he doesn't want to go to school because it's fighting. And imagine, and now he's in Sea Point in Cape Town, and he's now in Zimbabwe actually playing an ITF international tournament.
That's magical. Yeah, it's magical.
This is what it's about.
As well as the opportunity for a tennis career and education opportunity, you also provide them with a family of good values. You're basically a family there. So I think they must learn great, great personal skills and great bonding skills, which is something that I'm sure they can struggle to get at home.
100%. I mean, you can imagine the environments they come from.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they get love at home, but outside, it's just hard and tough, and opportunities are,
they're hard.
This is just making it available. Yeah. So we're just saying that if you're out there and you really do have what it takes, you deserve it, you'll get it.
Yeah.
It's possible.
You're really, mate.
It's not impossible.
Everything's possible. Have you seen the Functional Tennis Saber? It's the ultimate sweet spot training tool developed by me, Fabio Molli, helping you focus and narrow in on the areas you need to work on. It helps improve a range of skills crucial for improving your performance on the court: footwork, spacing, timing, ball watching, and more. It's used by ATP and WTA top 10 players in academies all over the world, and you'll also see it on your local tennis court. It's shipping worldwide, and if you want to find out more, visit our website at functionaltennis.com. So tell me, so for those that don't know, Anthony Harris is the coach of Lloyd Harris, who is not his, he's not your son, as I thought initially, by the way, until somebody told me. I got that wrong. But a few other people, when I was saying to them that I'm interviewing Anthony Harris and he coaches Lloyd Harris, is that his dad? And I was like, no, it's not his dad. But where Anthony Harris, by the way, is 23, is he? Or sorry, Lloyd Harris is 23, is he, Anthony?
Lloyd's 22.
So he's 22, but he entered the top 100 when he was 18, and within a year he was about 350, which is really, really good. And then after 4 years he's top 100. Less than 4 years he was top 100, which is a great achievement.
What's amazing about Lloyd is an example of coming from South Africa. Imagine a kid, he reached top 100, he never had one wild card. So this is a kid who starts, he's 15 years old, you start in the ITF juniors, you start playing ITF futures. He had to win, I think, like 10 or 11. And then I think the ranking was around like 200 and something. We still were not quite in the challenges. Then to get through the challenges, like you've got to win at least, let's say, 2 or 3 to be on that kind of level to break through into the 250s. So, yeah, it was like about 7 years of exactly this process he went through. So he reached like top 50. In the juniors, then it took him about 2 years to get through the futures into the challenges, and then 2 years in the challenges and to the top 100.
Well, he moved pretty quick through them. I know players have got the top 50 in the juniors and they were stuck at 600 for 8 or 9 years in the world, or maybe they would have moved up a little bit, but they never managed to break through. So I think becoming a top 50 junior in the world doesn't guarantee anything, first of all. Then I've seen other people play futures and they just played them, just can't get out of them. And I think that's stage you got to move on. But I was just impressed the way Anthony just went in, got the job done, moved to the next level, moved up again, and now he's starting to play Grand Slams. It's amazing. But where did you come across Lloyd first?
So I think he was about 14 years old, and we just like started the academy literally like a few months, and I was going around looking at kids and I saw this kid playing, and I just thought, wow, this kid is impressive, because he just looked different to me. And so I asked about him, and then about 6 months later, his mom came and dad came to speak with me, and they said, oh yeah, we're interested in bringing Lloyd. And I said, that would be great. I really, this kid is quite special. And remember, in our place, it's not about money. You don't come there because you pay, or like, you come there because we want you.
Okay.
And because we feel that you fit, and because we feel that you're gonna be good for everyone else as well, because everyone has to help everyone. Everybody has to help everyone grow. And so it's really like this with us, is that we choose who we want. And so we said to Lloyd, and so the kids, I know this sounds awesome, we ask the kids, if a new kid wants to come to the academy, we'll say to the kids, what do you think? Can we bring this player to the academy? And because we really want there to be like this, this vibe of like everybody's fighting for the same thing. Everybody's passionate to be the best they can and help each other. So anyway, so he joined. He was like 15 years old or something. And that was the beginning of the journey. Yeah, he just started. I think he played one ITF junior tournament or something. And so we structured his plan and his path. And with us, everything is designed. Everything is structured. Even their practices every single day, every single thing is planned and structured. And Lloyd, yeah, 7 years later, he broke the top 100. That's nice.
That's such a great achievement. But I just want to cut back to when you first saw him. What did you see that you thought he had a special ability? Was there anything that stood out? Is there any one thing that you actually saw and you go, God, this kid has it. Just look at that. Or was it just a feeling of everything? I'm just curious to know what exactly stood out.
So for me, I need to I need to see some wow factor. So I know that maybe sounds a bit vague, but I remember like watching him and then he would do stuff and I'd go, wow, that's amazing. How did he do that? And I think like, you know, when, so obviously we can talk about the obvious things. You can see that the athleticism, you can see the skill in the hands, you can see these things. But if you want to know what stood out was the wow, that which I always look for. I mean, and I think he had, I mean, he would do stuff, or he still to this day, he'll hit a forehand or do something and I'll go, wow, did you see that? And I think that's what was stood out.
I think you do need that to break into the top 100. Definitely, you got to have the wow factor. What was the feeling as a group from your academy when he did break into the top 100 last year?
Everyone was so excited for him. I mean, you can imagine when he was playing his matches leading up to it, the whole academy was like watching and screaming. I mean, I've got crazy, they were going stupid. They were so happy. Yeah.
I can say that feeling, it must be, that's what you're working towards, just break the top. I know you've worked to a lot of other things, but the top 100 is a massive one to break through. And I can't wait to hear the story from his side when he did promise he'll come on the Functional Tennis Podcast at some stage. So I'll be chasing him up on that. So this is a call out to Lloyd. If you're listening, I will be chasing you up on that. But I say the feeling was just such a team effort to break through the top 100. So what's next? How often do you travel with Lloyd? Like, let's say this year.
So this is obviously becoming an issue now. I mean, for example, this year I did the first 6 months every tournament. So we were together every week and I just said to him, look, I'm going to have to not do America because it's like 5-6 weeks and maybe I should give the other kids and also be in the academy a little bit. So this year it's been every week and except now America. And then we've started to increase the team. So we brought, so that maybe if we have some help that we feel is, so for example, we got involved with Alistair McCaw.
Okay, yeah.
And Ali started helping us this year. So he was with me when we were in Europe. He was with us for a lot of the time, like 3 or 4 weeks, and which has just been so amazing. I mean, with him. And then he's brought Xavier Melisse because they know each other pretty well. And so Xavier's doing America with Alistair. Right. And so hopefully this will really help to make sure that Lloyd is covered and the academy is also covered.
Yeah, I think we had Alistair on the podcast a few weeks ago. He was absolutely great. His knowledge is amazing. And does he have a physio with him? Or is it just Alistair and Xavier at the moment?
So at the moment, it's Alistair and Xavier. I know that he does have his physio in Cape Town, Karen, who I know he wants, you know, at the moment, a lot has to do with money, I think, you know. So it's about affording to have a team of physio, Alistair, myself. Xavier, you can imagine the cost. So right now it's about juggling, I think, this more and bringing what's important at the right time until he can obviously afford to have a full team, you know.
So top 100 does not mean you can have a big team. There's always that. I find people who are not top 100 say, oh, come on, I don't have a big team. I'm never going to make it. And then it just shows there's people in the top 100 who don't have, you can't afford, just because you make top 100 doesn't mean you can have a big team. So what is your answer to people who say, let's say they're 250, 200 and go, I can't have a coach travel with me every week for financial reasons? What's the solution to that? What do you think is the solution?
So I think, first of all, the reality is that most people don't. So if we look at the guys who are 250, 200 who are playing challenges, it's very, to have a coach week in, week out, they're not making enough money to be able to afford that. Okay. And we're talking just a coach. So most people who broke through like that anyway. So that's the way it is. So we can't like start, and you can't start making excuses and saying this one, because there are more who broke through with just one coach or maybe bringing a fitness trainer every now and again, or and then when they broke through. So I would say that it is what it is. Just you have to fight through this and make the best of what you have and believe that that's how a lot of people did did it, so why can't you? And so it's not a problem.
So basically, it's just it's an excuse, and you got to just, if you want to do it, you're going to do it, and that's it. You just got to get on with it, and you can't be using it as an excuse.
Correct. You can't use it as an excuse, because then ask Lloyd Harris. He'll tell you he only had one coach until he got to like top 100. He couldn't afford to travel. In fact, most time, and there was weeks when he didn't have a coach, and there was weeks when he would travel, when he was in futures, we had to do it in a group and try to find tournaments that we could all play in, so that, and these are the things you have to do. Yeah. And this is the reality. I mean, there are not that many people who are under 100 who have agents and have money. That's also the facts.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's plain and simple facts. There's no, that's it. Unless you're blessed with, obviously some countries have a nice federation, their national federation can help them out a bit more because there's more traveling to these tournaments. Those guys are a bit luckier, but most people, as you say, don't have any of those luxuries, and they break through without those luxuries, which will probably stand, will be a good test for you in the long run.
You definitely feel like you earned your right there, that's for sure.
And tell me, looking at the other side, what are some tips? Like, I was speaking to one of the coaches here actually in the National Federation today, and I was speaking to him, he goes, what's some advice for coaches that they have a player ranked 200, 250, 300, 400, let's say, but their goal is top 100. What advice do you have for a coach who's working with these players?
So I think you have to have a very clear goal, and you have to, your planning has to be very smart. In other words, there has to be a compromise between development and ranking, because if you're 250, 300 in the world, you obviously have a lot still to learn and to improve. Otherwise, you would be top 100. Sure. So these things that you have to still learn, and these things that you still have to learn to do, you're going to have to balance that between going. So an example would be when Lloyd was 300 in the world, people said, yeah, you must play on hard court because that way it's much better for you, and you can make points and you can get your ranking up. And I remember saying to him at that time, I said to him, no, you know what you're going to go do? You're going to go and play qualifying of challenges on clay. He's like, what? I'm like, yes, because if you learn and you win, if you get through qualifying on clay in the challenger and you win a round or two, the belief that of that you can do that in Europe on clay, how are you going to win Madrid or Roland Garros or Barcelona if you don't believe you can do that? So here was a moment in his career where you compromising ranking completely, and you're going for pure development and belief and for a longer term thing. And maybe you go, and so I think you have to be very smart with your planning, balance it carefully between working on improvement and working on your game, and of course being a bit smart by getting some points, being a bit smart on both sides. This is a time, and to remember that you are at a level also where everybody is one step from making it. So everybody there is fighting now. So that's the last advice. You got to be mentally ready for the fight, because if you're not ready, because everybody at that stage of that ranking is one step from making it, so they're going to push now. So that would be my
great
advice.
No, thanks. I think that's very important that these coaches understand, because too many times we talk about what does the player need. We rarely hear, well, what does the coach need to do? Like, what's important for the coach to do to help guide this player that they believe in? And yeah, so I was glad to hear that. Thank you very much. And also, what's a tip for, for juniors, young juniors? What advice would you have? A lot of our followers on Functional Tennis are young juniors. They're all aspiring professional tennis players. Some of them are internationally ranked. They have their ITF rank in different levels. But what do you think is important for a 15-year-old junior who's maybe top 10 in their country, depending on what country it is, but they're ranked in their country, they have a few ITF points, they're probably 250, 300 ITF. What advice do you have for those guys?
So if we're talking about a kid who's 200, 300 ITF, he's 16 years old, I think before my advice to these people, these kind of kids, about the actual tennis would be, first and foremost, find a good environment, that you're in a healthy environment where you are respected, where you love, and where you feel you can grow. Because I just think this is so important for success. This is very important, I think, that for kids, that they should find a place where they feel they can improve and where they are respected, and that's one. And that when they look for coaches, they should find coaches who care and who are passionate. I don't know what it means to have a different level, or this coach is better, maybe he's got more experience in this field or in this area. But for me, I see that the most important thing is when the coaches just care about and their agenda is the kids. To find coaches who have passion and whose agenda is about you, the player, and not about them. Mm-hmm. And be appreciative, be respectful, and believe. Okay, so these are like your basic cliche things, maybe. Okay, and then again, at 15, your planning is so important. Making sure that you have a correct mix of percentage time spent between competitive, technical, tactical, and physical development. So if I'm 7 years old, I'm going to have a large percentage of time spent on technical and motor skill development. If I'm 24 years old, my biggest percentage time spent should be competing. So make sure that your balance is correct, and do not chase ranking. Have a absolutely clear, structured plan that is with the right percentage of balance for you, so that your goals are reachable, and don't chase rank.
I've heard that mentioned. I've heard that mentioned a few times. Don't chase the ranking, and which I think is really important, because you can. It's a bit like getting greedy. I think you just puts you in the wrong direction, and you're not obviously working on your game if you're chasing the ranking. That's the way it looks like from the outside, and I think in most cases it reflects then what happens further down the line. But I do get lost on juniors. Like, I find some academies it's a bit like they're expensive. It's like a conveyor belt. It's a business. And sometimes I feel for the players, because you kind of know, you can see the level that they're at, and they have these dreams, and you know it's not going to happen, but the academy is making money and it tells them what it has to tell them. And ultimately, obviously, if the kid gets an opportunity to go to college, it's amazing, but you just wonder where they're wasting their time. And that's where it comes back to what you're saying. It's important that the coach cares, to find a coach who really cares for you and is honest with you as well. Has to be really honest and tell you the hard facts when you need to be told the hard facts.
Correct. And that the goal setting is real. I give you an example. I had a parent sit in front of me with a kid who was in her third month of her first year under 18, and the ranking of like 500, and said, listen, we want my kid to be top 100 ITF. Now, if you just look at I can just imagine so many people going, well, yes, you know, we need to work on the backhand and the forehand and the serve, I can just imagine that happened, like so many people saying that to these people. And then you look at these people and you go, do you know that to play top 100, you're going to need probably like 500 or something points. Do you know that you probably have to win like 4 grade ones or something? Do you understand that? And the point I'm making is that you give these kids, you set them goals that they can't achieve, and you basically set them up to fail, and they become failure. So when you set a goal for these kids, it's got to be achievable, because you got to build winners and achievers. It's so important.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And I do wish people, I know there are very honest people like yourself, people who care, but sometimes the business overtakes everything and stuff gets lost and players get upset and goals aren't achieved and whatever else. But enough talking about the bad things. There's plenty of people like yourself doing so much good out there. I have one last question for you. When will Lloyd break the top 50? What is the plan there?
Oh, I don't know. I think he has to keep working on the things he's working on, keep believing, and not put a time on it or a date. Put an improvement on it. So when I can serve at this percentage consistently at this speed, I'll be top 50. So
what you said there is actually a very, very powerful point. Is when you can do these things, it will happen automatically. So you got to keep working on these things. I think that is very wise words there, Anthony. Thank you for them. But I'm also going to thank you for a great interview. I really enjoyed that. And thanks for taking the time out to record. This is very insightful on everything from Run the Academy, your background, the work with the Match Foundation, and tips for the coaches, the bid on Lloyd. Hopefully, as I said, you may have to give Lloyd a nudge after the US series so we get him on here, get his side of things. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Fabio. Thank you so much. Really, I appreciate it.
What an amazing story from Anthony. I really hope you enjoyed it. He's done so much good work on the court and off the court. It's amazing. Hopefully soon we'll have Lloyd on the podcast. If you're new, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. We're on all the podcast apps. And I'll see you next week. Bye.